welcome to another episode, another edition of Australia's favourite celebrant podcast, which is a stat that I cannot verify or validate, and I have no proof. I asked my father-in-law, and he said, probably is.
I think that's better than asking your cats, which is what you usually do.
Yeah.
So
I'll found
at
out,
least he could give you an answer.
I don't want to spoil this for you, Sarah, but it turns out that my cats are lying assholes, and that's a story for another,
no.
It's another time. But I would not trust a word they say. Just, you know, if you're conversing with them, they are, yeah, they're not
good
the good
to
books.
Know.
Hey, Sarah,
good
how you doing?
Know. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good. I need to apologise to you and to the other four listeners of the podcast for the delay in getting another podcast out there. And I've got a million excuses, and some valid, some invalid, but, you know, here we are recording today.
We are indeed. It is Tuesday the 29th of May. It is, I suppose, officially the end of wedding season around the country. Some people said that was at the end of April, but it hasn't kind of stopped for me. I don't know what you're like, but I have 9 weddings in June, which is the crazy.
I wanted to call you because you mentioned this before, and I'm like, no, let's click record so I can call you up publicly. Because I don't want me giving you shit to go unnoticed. I want on the record.
Of course.
See, my mate Briggsy, winning photographer in
yes.
the Yarra Valley, the unofficial mayor of the Yarra Valley.
Yes.
Briggsy and I are of the opinion that there is no such thing as wedding season.
I'm totally with you on that, which is why I no longer do the, and that's a wrap for my wedding season post on Facebook, because it doesn't end anymore. Yes, I think there is definitely months that are busier than other months, but like June is my busiest month this year. So,
and you know what? Just... How nice is it to do a wedding without sweat pouring out of your arms? Or, you know,
it's
just
so nice.
So nice.
The best.
I've got a bunch of ceremonies in NZ over July, August. And like, they are my favorite because they're so cold and we're rugged up. And
oh, it's divine.
Yeah, it really is.
So good. And my biggest problem is that my head sweats a lot. So I get hair product in my eye. And it's very painful. And when you're mid ceremony, there's not a lot you can do about that.
You didn't have to share. Like I don't mind if you share, but you don't have to bear all if you don't want to.
Hey, this is a bear all kind of podcast. I don't mind. Bring it on.
You know, in that realm, I suppose let's bear all. We had actually recorded what was intended to be this episode. Was it? I think it must be 2 weeks ago now.
Two weeks ago.
And Sarah and I, we've had Sarah included, we've had a bit of a crazy travel schedule, and mine's been maybe a tad crazier. And so we thought, let's go full techo, let's go full nerdo, and we'll record. Were you on an iPad or were you on your phone?
I was. No, I was on an iPad on an app.
Yeah, and I was on my iPad and on an app, and we had what we thought were pretty good microphones, but the recording of that just didn't quite work out. It was pretty terrible. So there's a whole podcast that exists. It's a little bit like the greatest song ever written, and this is the tribute to that episode.
And we played the first thing that came to our heads, just so happened to be the best song in the world. It was the best song in the world.
Yes, it totally is. This is totally the tribute. I would like to mention that Josh was sitting on his patio at the time. There was a lengthy discussion about the word patio and whether it actually did refer to the space in which he was sitting, but we decided it did. So I am laying the blame at his feet.
And to share another story from that episode in the tribute nature, after you've shared your intimate head sweat story, I thought I'd just quickly share my have had a splash incident in the bathroom and gotten to the ceremony story, and I've realised that there's a wet patch where you don't want a wet patch, and I stood up in front of the crowd and I just had to power on, and I'm of the stupid and ignorant belief that no one noticed. But I was wearing light tan coloured pants.
And yes, and I'm fairly sure I did disabuse you of that notion and suggest that possibly everyone was just too polite to tell you.
Yeah, yeah. Because what do you say to your celebrant? Like, oh, hey, I noticed it looked like you peed your pants. How's the rest of your day going?
No.
gosh, we've had a real adventure since the last time we released an episode.
Such an adventure. But the most adventurous thing is that a bunch of things have changed in the world of celebrant legal stuff.
Oh God, way to bring this podcast down.
I know.
The peculiar thing is this, my friends. The song we sang on that fateful night, it didn't actually sound anything like this song. This is just a tribute.
However, before we get to that, when we did record this a couple of weeks ago, you had a few announcements to make. Do you remember what they were, and would you like to make them again?
I think there was one about sound gear that I was talking about.
Yes, there was.
So part of, like, when we mentioned this crazy period behind me, and if you're a friend, you probably know because I probably called and bitched on me wine to you, and if you follow my Instagram stories, you might have seen a bit of it, but I had this crazy 10 days, 10 weddings, nutso, Melbourne, Sydney, Queenstown, New Zealand, Gold Coast, Noosa, everything was happening. It was just this crazy, stupid 10 days that I probably should have never booked because it stressed me to no avail, but I got through it all, and on the first day of those 10, I was driving to the first one, and I was actually feeling like on top of the world until someone ran at the back of my car and smashed the back of the car up. And what was in my boot? My Sennheiser LSP500 PA system, which, as good as it is,
very expensive PA system. Yeah,
it's the replacement cost about $6,500, because I've got a few extra bits and bobs. As good as it is not a fan of getting hit by a car.
Funny that.
Yeah, no, this is a little bit of research I did that afternoon. If you hit it with a car, won't work as well.
No, so, amazing.
So I know that many celebrants over the time have asked me for what PA system I use because I've got opinions on sound.
Very strong opinions, not just opinions.
Dare I say even controversial opinions?
Sure.
For example, I've seen some celebrants use PA systems they've bought from JB Hi-Fi. I wouldn't be caught dead in front of one of those. I know a lot of celebrants of the MyPros and the Chios, and they're fine, but I think a wedding deserves a little bit more, and I know that's a controversial opinion. So,
hang on, back up.
Yeah,
you've never once before said they're fine.
Oh, okay, they're shit.
Yeah, there we go. That's what I wanted.
I was trying to be polite. I was trying to make friends.
No, but
I'm just, I was just trying to get everyone on board. So I'm not a fan of the things you get from JB Hi-Fi, and there's Altronics has got a few cheap, shitty ones from China, and the Micro and the Chio. The Roland is what I had before mine, and I liked the Roland. I just wanted a little bit more, so I'm pro Roland, but you can't even buy the Roland anymore. And they've got a sister product, which is okay, but that's fine. And Behringer's got these Bluetooth microphones, which are just terrible. Terrible. So, okay, anyway, we go through all that to say that my PA system's been written off. I'm not really in a place to drop another $6,000 on a new system that week while insurance figures itself out. And I'd been hearing a few whispers from DJ friends of mine about this Bose portable battery-operated PA system called the Bose S1, S for Sally. And I thought this is a great time to jump in the deep end and see what it's like. So I bought a Bose S1. The only problem with the Bose S1 is it doesn't have a built-in wireless receiver. So it not even like, because I know when I mentioned this to you, like, well, the MyPro doesn't either, but the MyPro has a kind of a slot where you can kind of slot in the thing so that if you install the wireless slot, it then does have a wireless mic built in. So it's kind of like semi-built in. But the Bose hasn't got a slot for a wireless. It just doesn't have a wireless. So if you want to have a wireless mic with it, you've got to get a wireless kit that has whatever you want to speak into. So I'm a handheld mic guy, but I know some people are lapel and some people are headset. So you got to have a kit that has the transmitter that you have on your body and then a receiver that is like a battery powered kind of portable, the kind of thing you might put on a camera. If you're doing commercial video stuff, you want to have a wireless mic and the camera have a wireless receiver. So I've got a Sennheiser version of that. And so the mic and the receiver is about $1,000, but the PA system itself without any mic or anything is $1,000 with the battery pack. Depends where you buy it. I got a pretty good deal. So I think I got $945. I've seen it retail for $1,100.
But your Sennheiser mic works with the Bosey, like you don't have to buy all new Bosey stuff.
Well, so no, Bose don't make microphones. So it's got two, the industry term for it is XLR, but you know the three-pin microphone lead, like the standard microphone lead? It's got two of those on the back of it, and you can also plug in a jack, which is a quarter-inch plug. And it also has Bluetooth in, or you can plug a 3.5mm, which is like your headphone jack. And it's amazing. It sounds
cool.
If not as good, maybe a tad better than my Sennheiser.
It weighs
7 kilograms, and I take it on carry-on.
So just as a comparison, what did your whole Sennheiser kit weigh?
So when I traveled with it, inside the Pelican case, which is the hardcover kind of doobie whacker, so the hard case, the PA system, the two microphones, and the whole kit weighed 32 kilos exactly.
I had no idea it was that much. That's quite a lot.
So,
like,
I'm
that's
really
not
happy.
Even normal baggage. Like, you've got to pay stuff for that.
Yeah. So, well,
so 7 kilos is a big difference for you. This is going to make a massive difference.
Yeah. This is why I've always traveled with Qantas, because if you've got status with Qantas, you can take a 32 kilo bag. So that's why I've been fine with that. But this Bose is actually really good. Like, I'm really, really impressed with it.
Excellent. Now, just a little note, everybody, you don't have to go out and buy a new PA system just because Josh likes his new one, because Josh has a tendency to like his new toys and rant from the roof about how good they are, but yours is totally fine. If it does the job, Josh's ears are weird, so he hears things that nobody else hears, so it's totally fine if you have a Micro or a Chiyo or whatever else you have. If you're happy with it, it's totally fine, but if you're in the market for a new one, then you can pay attention to Josh.
Can I give, like, this is not an idea that I don't want to try and make everyone go and buy a Bose, but let me just put an idea out to you. Many of us think that our PA system is fine because we are sometimes the closest people to it, and so we hear it fine, but the PA system isn't for you. This is a little bit like marketing and advertising. Sometimes we'll do an ad and like, oh, yeah, I really like that ad. Well, spoiler alert, the ad's not for you. It's for people that you're trying to attract. And so the PA system's not for you. It's for everyone in the crowd. And so most people in the crowd probably wouldn't give you a good opinion of is it loud enough, is the quality good enough, that kind of thing. But if you – it might be a friend. It might be – honestly, I do this with trusted vendors. If there's a photographer, if there's a venue person I'm working with, I'll say like when the whole crowd's there, so not when there's no one there, but when everyone's there, it's like, can you please give me some honest feedback? Is it loud enough? Is it clear enough? Does it sound like me? Because sometimes if you get a cheaper mic, particularly this is what I don't like about the Micro mics. The Micro mic, when I speak into it, it doesn't sound like my voice. So get some honest feedback from someone at the very back of the ceremony, because the people at the back deserve to hear the ceremony just as much as the people at the front. And so it might not be that you've got to replace your whole PA, but if you're one of the celebrants that put their PA on the ground, PA system on the ground without a stand, then it's probably not reaching the back as well as you'd hope.
Oh yeah, I'm with you on that one. Definitely get a stand.
Yeah. And it might be that you're not holding the mic close enough. Like, my advice for a microphone is that while you're speaking into it, you should be able to lick it. If you can't lick it, it's not close enough.
I always tell people that, and then once somebody licked my microphone.
Yes.
The father of the bride actually licked it, like mid-ceremony. And I was like, dude, I'm telling you how close to hold it. I'm not giving you an instruction.
See, people think microphones are magical. Like, if I hold it down near my belly button, it'll be fine. Well,
no.
It's just not. But try not to lick the microphone.
No,
but maybe just be close enough where if you needed to lick it, you could.
Yes, correct.
So there's that. We also talked about how you and I, along with some industry friends, have just, like, it's pencil stage. Like, there's no website, there's no price, there's no... It's just penciling things in stage. The first week of August 2019, we're doing a wedding industry conference. So not just for celebrants. There's going to be a celebrant stream, but there's going to be a wedding industry conference, which is for people in the wedding industry. And there'll be some classes that are for – or seminars that are for everyone. And there'll be some seminars that are for – well, if you're a celebrant, this is the kind of thing you want to go to.
Cool.
So that's happening.
Sounds good. They were your announcements.
They were. Although, can I just slip something else in extra
Please
that I've
do.
Done since the last 2 weeks? So I'm in a really crazy time of life. We've got a baby on the way. We've got some family things going on in the background that are taking up a bit of time and resource, which is – that's why we have family, to be caring and loving and look after each other. But I realized that I was spending a lot of time replying to inquiries, which has always been something I've been proud of. Like, I really put a lot of effort into replying to inquiries, doing videos and that kind of thing, because I think that's where I can stand out. If you're emailing 100 vendors, maybe Josh's good reply might seal the deal. And I still wanted to do that, but I just wanted to try and lower the number, because it was becoming an hour or three a day of doing this, and I just didn't have that every single day. So I've actually instituted a new system for getting inquiries.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm only a week in, and I love it, but maybe in a couple of episodes' time, I can maybe do a bit of a debrief and say this is why I stayed with it or this is why I didn't stay with it. Instead of having a contact form where you go, hey, it's Josh and Britt, we're getting married on the 7th of September and we're getting married at the Gold Coast and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, enter a big form and then I reply saying, yes, I'm available. Instead of doing that, I've put a step in between that and that. Whereas if you visit marriedbyjosh.com right now, instead of having an inquiry form, there's a form that just asks for your email and or phone number and it goes request info pack or information pack. And you click the button and you get an email or a text or both with a link to my information pack, which is, like, honestly, every single question you could hopefully ask about me answered. Pricing, travel, legals, PA, rehearsal, yeah, just everything. So I've reduced the number of inquiries I'm getting, but I've also increased the number of people that are contacting me every day because it's a very, really non-committal way of talking to me. And then one, if they've gone through that and they're like, yeah, still, we want the guy, then they inquire. And it's actually working really well for me.
Oh, I like it. I do like it. I look forward to, yes, hearing more about that in a couple of episodes and how it's gone. Because I know that you have had sort of canned responses and stuff that a lot of us would have in our emails, like email templates that we can use to respond to an inquiry. But I still like to personalize mine a little bit. I've got an email template, but I still like to go, hi, well, you know, thanks so much for getting in touch. I'm available on this date at that venue and something else about their email if they've said anything. And then I launch into the template. So that does still take time.
Yeah.
And the thing that I'm actually finding takes me the longest is when people email me out of the box with like 10 questions. Hi, I'm inquiring if you're available on this date at this place and can you answer these 10 questions? How do you do the ceremony? What PA system do you provide? How can you personalize it? What legal, bloody, bloody, blah. And so I've been toying with, you know, putting together a frequently asked questions type of thing, page on my website or whatever, which would be a similar thing to this info pack that you're sending. But I had not considered sending that to everyone as a first port of call. And I think that's quite cool.
Particularly if a lot of people aren't inquiring to book today. A lot of people are like, I'm just fishing around, seeing what's happening.
Gathering information.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I do wonder if there'd be any people for whom it's too much information.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you where the information pack is available. I'll tell you the address in a second.
Oh, no. I'm not saying that it is too much information. I'm just saying for some people would providing all of that up front before they even know if you're available or whatever, would some people go, whoa, too much?
Yeah, and maybe.
That's okay.
So here's the thing. I'm actually trying to turn the tide on are you available being the
first question.
The first question, because I'm trying to – and maybe I'm crazy, trying to cultivate a wedding industry culture where I'm choosing vendor A, vendor B, vendor C. Now, when are you guys all available?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to I'm getting married on the 1st of October. And if you're not available.
Who can I find that's available on that day?
Yeah, because I don't know. I struggle with that idea. I like the idea of like, well, I've chosen like for my wedding, I've chosen Briggsy because I love Briggsy and I've chosen Sarah because I love Sarah and I've chosen Zonzo, I say, because I love Zonzo and that, all right, guys, how can we figure this out? Like, I'd like a Saturday. So what Saturdays are you guys available? I'd like it to be about a year away.
Yeah.
And I know that maybe that's a little bit more effort and work, but at least then, you know, they've chosen you.
Yeah, that's cool.
Which is kind of a little bit more like, I'd, Because if I just had a couple just book me while the emails just come through. And we've been back and forth on dates for the last week because she wanted me. I'm like, that's so amazing. And and actually, just I know we're going completely sidetracked here, but you know how you ask, do you ask this on your booking? Like, how did you find out about me or where did you find me?
I don't ask it until, like, I don't ask it in my inquiry form because I took out as many fields as I could. But I do ask them when I get an inquiry, the first thing I go back to them is say, hi, thanks so much for reaching out. Where did you find me? And then into, yes, I'm available and or no, I'm not or blah, blah, blah.
So I don't ask it on the inquiry, but I do ask it on the booking form. So when they're paying me, like where did, and this couple, who I know for a fact, this is not where they found me. So I just thought I'd just give everyone a bit of insight. Cause when you say, oh, how did you find out about me? They're often not giving the full story. Cause this couple, they just booked me for my $4,500 package and it's going to be $600. So they've just decided to pay $5,100 cause they're getting everything. And they said they found me on Easy Weddings. I have not been there in quite a while.
It's funny that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I've had a few people like that too. I find it really interesting that you only ask that at booking though, because is it not also important to find out where the people who didn't book you found you? Because it might be that if you've got a whole bunch of people who found you in one place and none of those people book you, maybe that one place is not worth you spending time or resources.
Yeah, so look, I totally hear you on that, but I don't care.
Okay.
I was trying to think of a nice way to put it. I understand that's valuable information, but I can only give a fuck about so many things.
Yeah, and I think that you probably are in a different position to a lot of people where you you're at a position now where your marketing is quite targeted anyway.
Yeah.
So you're probably not spending time and resources marketing in places that weren't going to work for you anyway because you've done all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And my marketing is it's either very direct or if I'm paying to be somewhere that's not Facebook or Instagram, it's because I desire to build a working relationship with that. Like I just paid to be with Practical Wedding and Catalyst Wedco, two American blogs, magazines, because I really value what they stand for in the wedding industry and I really like who they are. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure this isn't going to be like a massive lead generator, but I'm going to pay to jump on board and partner with you guys because I like what you do. I'd like to prepare content for them and I just like where their heart is, but I'm not doing that for leads. And that's still part of my advertising budget. And hey, if I get a lead, that's lovely.
Yeah, it's cool.
I'm trying to do a little bit more American stuff. Like we've got probably 2 or 3 months in America over the next 2 years that I'm trying to book. And so that'd be lovely, but it's not the main thing. The main thing is that it's more about brand partnerships or a marketing direct.
Yes, absolutely. And I suppose the takeaway I want to give people who listen to this podcast is particularly at the start of your business, because I know we have a lot of people who are studying to become celebrants or who have just become celebrants who listen. I think that particularly when you're starting your business, tracking every single inquiry and where it comes from is super important.
Totally.
Because, and so it's one thing for you to say, what, 9, 10 years down the track, that's not important to me, but I think particularly for newbies, it sure is. Cause I know when I started, my marketing approach was really scattergun. I just kind of threw money at a whole bunch of things and to see what stuck. So if I hadn't tracked where every inquiry came from, I wouldn't have been able to say, well, I didn't get anything from that. I'm not going to spend that money again. And I think that's really important when you're building up a business.
Yeah, absolutely. Cause we see, we see it in Facebook groups or even just in conversation. Or, hey, do you think it's good value to advertise on blah, 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 blah? Mm. Or do you think it's good value to be on this directory? And not all of it is about leads. Some of it is about leads. Some of it is about SEO. Some of it is about, partnerships. And, there's literally a wedding fair that I'm paying for. I just paid for it yesterday and I just feel yucky for it, but I'm paying to be at the fair. I can't even attend the fair. So I'm going to have to go there early in the morning, set up a stand, go. I've got a wedding 4 hours away, go to that wedding, come back and pack up afterwards. just because I want to stay in relationship with the organization putting the fair on.
Yeah.
And that's worth $250 and me being put out of my way.
Yeah.
So like annoying.
And it's like those questions about, you know, is it worth being on blah blah, or is it worth doing expos or whatever? My answer to that is you have to try it and find out for yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, I know one celebrant, for example, who, she didn't do it this year because she just had a baby, but for years and years, she's done one major expo at the start of the year, and she would take 25, 30 bookings from that expo. Now I do the same expo and I take 4 or 5 bookings. For me, that's still valuable. I've still made back my, investment. And for me, it's also about networking with other vendors. And there's a lot of other reasons I do expos. But if I was to just compare myself to her, I'd go, well, then I'm not getting the same value as you are. Or if I went into a situation and said to her, is it valuable doing this? And she'd go, yeah, because of, you know, this is how many I take. I might expect the same return. And everybody's different. So I really think that, you know, it's all very well and good to say to other people, what's your experience with this directory, that expo, whatever, but you really have to give it a shot. Their style's different to you. The way they set up their stand will be different to you. The content they use in their ad will be different to you. They might be at a different price point. There are so many factors that go into whether or not a specific marketing channel is valuable for a person. And I don't think other people can necessarily go, oh, okay, well, this has worked for that person, so I need to do that as well.
Yeah, yeah. There's always context. And I know there's people that swear by, say, Easy Weddings and swear by Xtra, but there's, yeah, there's always context. And this is an important conversation that I'm going to pin, because this is going to be one we always come back to. But Sarah, there's been a ton of legal stuff happening, and you and I have already recorded a whole podcast about it.
And now I'm going to do it again.
This is the tribute to that.
It is the tribute. I am going to try and be a little bit less verbose than I was last time, but still, okay. So number one, marriage regulations. So Every celebrant should know that there are 3 major documents that govern the work that we do. The Marriage Act 1961 is the head honcho. The Marriage Regulations previously 1963 is like the 2IC. And the Guidelines on the Marriage Act for Marriage Celebrants, the most recent version of which was published in 2014, it's kind of like the instructional manual about how both of those things operate. So we know that the Act was amended in December to allow for marriage equality. It is still the Marriage Act 1961. We still write according to the rights of the Marriage Act 1961 on all of our notice of intent of marriage and certificates, etc. So that's the most recent change to that. The marriage regulations, however, have been completely rewritten. So every legislative instrument, I believe, kind of expires. It's called sunsetting. And the 1963 regs sunsetted on the 31st of March 2018, which means that the 2017 marriage regulations came into force on the 1st of April 2018. Now, this document's been totally rewritten. It's halved in length. It's gone from 90-something pages to about 50. And there's a lot of stuff in there that's really about the regulation of the celebrant program and marriage of minors and yada yada, which isn't really important in our day-to-day practice. However, there are 2 things that I believe are quite important for practicing celebrants in our day-to-day practice. The first one that I'm just going to touch on is that you'll probably know that as celebrants, we have to keep all of our marriage paperwork, i.e. our red registers or our copies of the marriage certificates, for 6 years under the marriage regulations. So that means that from the last date in your marriage register, you have to keep that book for 6 years. The old regulations used to say that if a celebrant died or became permanently incapacitated, that burden passed to their family. So the family also had to maintain those records for 6 years. That's been turned off in the new regs. So basically, if a celebrant dies or becomes permanently incapacitated, the family can make a decision about what they want to do with all of those documents. They don't have to keep them for 6 years. My suggestion is they always call, I think people should call BDM and say, do you want them? Does somebody want them? Should we destroy them? What should we do? But it's turned off that requirement on families, which is, you know, one less thing that families have to worry about. This is not relevant for if a celebrant retires. If a celebrant retires, you still have to maintain things for 6 years. This is if a practicing or retired celebrant dies or becomes permanently incapacitated. So that's number one. The other thing that's changed quite dramatically in
Can I intercept quickly? Yes. Just a little bit of excitement. In about, 4 months, I can throw away and destroy my red book. The last
one
I
did. Oh, my goodness.
22nd of September 2012. I just, like, when you said 6 years, I thought, oh, I wonder when the last time I used mine was. 22nd of September 2012. I'm so excited about destroying
it. There you go. No more red book. Yes. And just to confirm, that means that Josh has individual paper copies of all of his marriage celebrants or electronic ones of all of his marriage certificates. He just doesn't use the red book because that's not required. We have talked about that before.
We have. They're all electronic.
Yes, excellent. I love it.
It's a beautiful time.
I like paper, and I have a copy of the script with the marriage certificate in a plastic pocket, and they're all lined up in folders on my shelf because they look pretty. Anyway, okay, so the next thing that's changed in the marriage regulations is the code of practice. So you should all know that we have to work to the code of practice, and the new code again is significantly shorter. So it's gone from 2.5 pages to 1.5 pages, and they've stripped out a lot of the kind of instructional clauses. So things like, for example, it used to say we need to maintain appropriate facilities for meetings. It now says arrange appropriate facilities. It used to say arrive no later than the agreed time or 20 minutes before the ceremony if you're doing more than one ceremony a day. It now says be punctual. It used to say conduct a rehearsal if requested. It now says give parties information so that they can decide whether a rehearsal is needed. Some other clauses have been streamlined and some clauses have been removed altogether. For example, the ones that say you have to provide office facilities, that you have to confirm all details and sign declarations, that you have to respect the expectations of the parties, that you have to ensure the ceremony is audible, and that you have to accept feedback from the parties. They've been removed altogether, which I find weird. However, in the new draft guidelines, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, the new draft guidelines say that this list is not intended to limit what is expected. We also expect you to make sure the ceremony is audible and accept feedback and sign declarations and blah, blah, blah. We're just not saying it in the code anymore. Now we're saying it in the guidelines. It's all very weird. I don't understand it, but that is what the change is. Now, not only do we need to know that because we have to abide by all of those clauses, but it's also strongly recommended in the guidelines that we either provide a copy of the code of practice to our clients or we have a copy of it displayed somewhere where they can see it and read it if we hold meetings in our home. So if you are providing a copy of the code of practice to your clients, make sure you're giving them the new one. That's the big takeaway for that.
Have I told you what I'm doing with that?
No, please do. You did tell me in the last podcast, so let's hear the tribute to that.
When you book me, when you click book and pay the deposit, an automatic email is sent out to you, just a single one, and it has the code of practice and also a blurb on the notice of intent, just the kind of frequently asked questions about the notice, like when is it due, who does it. That kind of stuff. And so that goes out the second they click book. So they have a copy of the code of practice, because I don't have an office to have it displayed prominently. And even if I did, it's a pretty bloody ugly thing to have displayed prominently.
It is.
So, yeah, that's how I deal with that. And can I just throw back to the removal of some of the codes of practice to the guidelines? How, apart from a performance review aspect, the guidelines aren't law, they're guidelines on the
correct
law. And so I'm not advocating for mass chaos and disobedience, but they're guidelines on the law. Whereas the items you mentioned, they were law.
Yes.
And now they're part of the guidelines.
Yes.
Which is, like, it's...
Correct.
It's an interesting kind of transition, which you've already kind of highlighted, but I just want to highlight it to everyone in that point, that it's, like, obviously the guidelines do come into play in our, is it 5-year review they give us?
Yeah, if they do one.
If, so... And at that point, they can be like, well, you haven't broken the law, but you have not followed the guidelines, so be off with you. And I'm sure they'd cast us into a spell or something like that. I guess that's how it works.
Something.
But it's just an interesting kind of point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't really understand it. It seems really odd to me that you would take those things out and then go, oh, we still expect you to do them. We're just not going to, like, make you. Like, it's just really... odd, but
can I throw just one more idea out there?
Please do.
Do you think it's just because, like, they have been pummeled with complaints, half of them with my bloody name on them, but they've been pummeled with complaints. Like celebrants just love bloody complaining about other celebrants. Do you think they're kind of just trying to streamline that process? Like, yeah, cool, yes, complain, but complain on these issues.
I actually, well, no, because, for example, if we're looking at the make all efforts to ensure the ceremony is audible to all present. They did a review of the whole celebrant program many years ago, and the number one complaint from married couples was nobody could hear the ceremony. We couldn't hear. That was shit. That's why they put it in the code of practice in the first place, in response to complaints from couples that nobody could hear. So now they've gone and taken it back out again. And that just seems really odd to me, because you put it in to stop complaints. Now you've taken it out again, and people are going to use that as an opportunity to not buy a PA system or whatever. And now you're going to have more, like, yeah, no.
But were they fighting a losing battle there? Like, I know there's celebrants you and I know. There's celebrants that I've trained when I was doing OPD in WA who proudly proclaimed they don't need a PA, And I would argue against that. I think if there's more than 20 people present, that's kind of my limit for yes PA, no PA. If there's more than 20 people there, I would say probably need a PA. And sure, you can hear you, but can everyone hear you?
I hear what you're saying, but the number of celebrants I know who say I don't need a PA is very small. The vast majority of them go, oh, it says in the code of practice that I have to have a PA, so I better get one.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
So not a fight, not a losing battle at all.
Yeah, anyway.
So, yeah, it's pretty interesting.
I don't want to get held up on small little nitpicky things, because there's a shitload of stuff.
It's
important, yeah.
Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about is the new guidelines. So the draft guidelines were released to all celebrants on the 4th of May 2018, asking for comments, clarification, anything like that. Amazing. Public consultation on guidelines. Love it. Comments are due to the Attorney General's Department next Monday. That's the 4th of June. We're expecting to have a final version come into force on the 1st of July 2018. I'm crossing my fingers a lot for that. So I spent a good 10 plus hours a few weeks ago reading the new guidelines, comparing them to the old guidelines, and I think I had 7 pages of please clarify this or please add this content or
no.
Why are you blah. Yeah, total nerd. We all know that I'm a nerd. We all know that I'm a nerd. But hey, I did that so that you didn't have to. So yeah, I sent a lot of content back, and I know that other people have as well, which is really great. So we hope that there's new guidelines. Now, I'm not going to start teaching the new stuff until it is confirmed in the new guidelines, hopefully on the 1st of July. However, there are a couple of things, like 3 or 4 things I just want to flag, because I think they're super important and people need to be aware that these things are coming in, because there are some things that are changing that I'm not going to talk about now because I'm hoping that comment back will make them not change or make them change, whatever. But these things I think are staying. So the first one is, for evidence of the dissolution of a previous marriage, we have never been allowed to accept a stat deck. The instruction has always been, you must see a divorce certificate, you must see a death certificate. if your couple cannot get access to those things, contact the Attorney General's Department for advice. It now says, go ahead, accept a stat deck. If you think that's fine, no problem. And it's removed the contact the department for advice section. So this again is for exceptional circumstances only. So you know how we can accept a stat deck for proof of date and place of birth in exceptional circumstances where they don't have a passport or birth certificate, for example, if it's a refugee. Same thing for the dissolution of a previous marriage. This is not, oh, I can't be bothered downloading it from the court portal, or I don't want to pay the $25 that it costs me to get a new one or whatever. That's not good enough. This is for things like, this is the kind of thing I'm thinking of. A woman who was born and raised in Iraq, married a man who was then killed in combat in Iraq. Now, I don't know the full details of how their civic registration system works over there, but I think it's quite possible that that death might not ever have been registered. There may not be a death certificate for that. And that, you know, could be in lots of other parts of the world as well. So it's actually not going to ever be possible for her to get a death certificate to show us. In that circumstance, a detailed stat deck would be acceptable, as long as the celebrant is happy that that person is free to marry. And there's a list in the new guidelines of all the things you might want to see in that stat deck. So maybe media coverage or statements from other people who would have expected to hear from that person if they were still alive, all those sorts of things to give evidence and weight to their claim that they're no longer married. So that's one big thing. Second, this one's, it's eminently simple, but it's really good because I always get confused. In the conjugal status box on the NOIM and the certificate of marriage, we used to have to write widow or widower. I could never remember which is for a man and which is for a woman. Now we just write widowed with an ED at the end for both. Great. Simple. Love it. No,
it's little things like that that obviously represent the inclusive nature of not just legislation, but also obviously as it rolls out through guidelines and whatnot. Like it's nice. It's nice.
It's really nice. Yeah. Let's just have one word that works for everyone. Great. Another one, and you will hear about this in OPD if you haven't already been, is that you'll remember that when the legislation changed in December, the legal vows were changed so you could say, I call upon the people here present to witness that I take you to be my lawful wedded husband, wife, or spouse. Spouse was added into the allowable, terms as a gender neutral term. After some lobbying by some celebrant associations, the new guidelines now also allow that words to that effect can also allow partners in marriage. So you can't say just partner, I take you as my partner, because the word partner on its own implies that you're not married, but you can say, I take you to be my partner in marriage. And this is great because let's just go with it. The word spouse is a bit icky and some people don't want to use that. I'm hearing from some members of the gay community that the words husband and wife are considered straight words. So partners in marriage, I'm hoping will satisfy a lot more people, which is great.
Again, was there any clarification for BFF?
No, definitely not BFF.
Old mate?
Nope. Got any more there?
Yeah, I'm not going to delay the podcast anymore. No, but good. I do have others, but I'm choosing to hold back.
No, none of them. None. None. Not Mrs., not old lady. None of those.
Ball and chain? Nothing?
No. Moving right along. The other thing that has changed is that we all know that we're not allowed to do surprise weddings where the wedding is a surprise for one of the parties. We're allowed to do them where it's a surprise for the audience, no problem. But you're not allowed to accept a NOIM signed by one party where the wedding's going to be a surprise for the other party. That's no good because of duress and consent issues. However, they've added a new statement that we may accept a NOIM signed by both parties, so both parties are aware, where the date of the wedding is to be a surprise. So as long as both parties are aware that there's a wedding, it's going to happen. But one of them is aware that it might happen anytime between 1 month's time and 18 months' time, and they're okay with that, the date can be a surprise. So that's new, interesting. I like that. The other thing that is a major change is that there were multiple spots in the guidelines where it used to say, if this happens, contact the department for guidance. That statement has been removed in no less than 6 instances. If there is doubt about a annoying being defective, if a party cannot provide the dissolution paperwork, if the celebrant has doubt if the consent is real, if the celebrant is contacted to conduct a surprise wedding, or if the celebrant is contacted to conduct a ceremony as a prize. So all of those things used to say, if in doubt, contact the department. They've now said, they've now removed that. So basically, don't call us. We probably won't also call you. So just don't ever. Which is interesting.
It's a real vote of confidence for celebrancy, though, which I think is something. I think it's something the community needs. I know there was was it 3, 4, 5 years ago? There was a big push through OPD/OPD providers/ I think it might have even been in the compulsory at some point, where they're saying, "Hey, no need to put your celebrant number on your business card and letterhead and website." Do you remember that? Was it
not allowed? Not allowed. Well, don't do it.
Yes. And I know I had a conversation because I was training OPD at the time, and quite a few people said, "Well, how will they know that we're a celebrant?" I'm like, well, you just say, "I'm a celebrant," and you are. And so, like, worst comes to worst, they can look your name up on the website, but you don't need to kind of, you don't need a badge or a number on your website or something to, or you don't need to put, you know, Commonwealth authorized civil marriage celebrant, to say you just are a celebrant. You have the authority. Like, you don't have to prove you have the authority, because you just do. I remember that time I thought I was kind of not saddened, but I just was a little bit dismayed by how many celebrants I was in contact with that didn't understand the full authority they had. Just, they didn't have to prove that authority. They just have it.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's
like a, I am, I will go vulnerable for a second and wait for you to call me out, Sarah. I don't think I've told you this story. I had a groom recently who my spiel, like when I'm going to be your celebrant and we're doing the noyum, I'll say, so to get married you need to be 18 or over, not already married, not related, consenting, willing to marriage, and you need to be able to do your notice before 1 month before. And the groom goes, So what if I've been married before? I said, okay, well, cool. Well, yeah, I need to see evidence of that marriage ending. And he goes, well, I don't really know if I was married. And I said, oh, most people would have some understanding of whether they had been married or not.
totally.
Tell me the story. He goes, well, I was in China was in love with a girl, but the family didn't want us to be together. And we had a wedding ceremony, but I didn't sign anything. And the father made sure that it wasn't legally processed. And then they're obviously no longer together, and now he's back here in Australia. And I said, look, I consider this quite a simple thing. You're more than welcome to seek legal advice, and I recommend you do so. And if further than that, I'd recommend you talking to, whether it's the Chinese embassy or the Chinese birth, death, and marriages, or you contact the Queensland birth, death, and marriages. But when push comes to shove, before 1 month before your wedding, you need to sign a form, and on that form it'll have your marital status, and that marital status will say never validly married or divorced or widowed or is there a fourth?
Annulled.
Is that a status available? No,
because it's never validly married.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah. And so I said, look, I'm not your mum. Yeah. You guys got to figure this out. so I'll leave you with it. And he called and said, I believe I've never validly been married. I said, cool. So I'm going to take that from you. You'll sign the form. If it turns out not to be true, then you're signing not only a notice of intent, but you're also signing a declaration, saying that you have never validly been married, and if that's not true, that's on your back. He goes, I'll take that. I'm like, okay, cool. So we did it, it's processed, and it's done. Because he was of the understanding that the marriage never was legally processed in China. And And I didn't call the BDM and I didn't call the AG and I didn't call you.
So I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah,
because
totally.
Because it's actually not your job to call the AG or the BDM anyway. That would have been his job.
Yeah.
But you asked all the right questions. You said, tell me the story. Did you sign anything? You know, I tend to ask them as well, did you show any identifying documents? Like, did you show your passport or your birth certificate or whatever? And he was able to tell you, no, didn't do any of those things. You still said, I suggest that you seek legal advice, blah, blah, blah. So, like, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad. I was worried. I was worried that Sarah was about to out me for a fraud, and I'm going to have to bloody.
And you also, I mean, you did everyone. Put it back on him and say, you know, this is your declaration. It's your statement. Of course, we shouldn't allow people to make false statements just by saying, "Well, it's your statement. You can say whatever you like." But in that circumstance, it sounds to me like he went away and he thought about it. You told him all of the things you need to think about. And you went, no, I haven't been validly married. Okay, that's fine. I'm happy with that. So I think it's not okay for somebody to say, hey, I know that I've been married, but I just don't want to tell anyone about it. And you say, hey, it's your declaration. You can put never validly married if you want. That's not okay. But you asked all the right questions. So I think that's totally fine. It is. It's really interesting with people who get married overseas who don't know if they're married or not. You know, I had a couple, I think I've talked about this before, I had a couple who contacted me who they got married in Zimbabwe. And I actually looked up the Zimbabwe Marriage Act for them because, once again, nerd, and found out what you have to do to get married in Zimbabwe. And I said, did you do these things? And they went, yep. I went, well, in that case, you're married. Oh, okay. So it's interesting that sometimes people don't realize that other countries' ways of getting married is going to be different from here. So just because you have to do XYZ in Australia doesn't mean that you have to do XYZ to get married in Malaysia or in Ethiopia or whatever. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's definitely an interesting one. I love it. But yes,
I love it.
We're no longer to even if you had wanted to, the new guidelines would not tell you to contact them for guidance.
Cool. So is that kind of the is that the bullet points, or have we missed one?
There's one more big thing. So that's the guidelines points. If you've got anything to say about the guidelines, make sure you send it back to AGD by the 4th of June.
I've literally had it sitting in my PDF reader on my iPad for about 3 weeks. Like, yeah, one day soon I'll go over that. And
yeah,
I,
that's never going to happen, is it?
Just haven't.
No, one day. Do read the guidelines. Anyway, okay, the other thing now, we have talked.
Hang on, can I clarify? I've obviously read the guidelines, but I want to review the new
read
ones.
Read the new guidelines when they come out.
Yeah.
If you don't feel the need to be involved in making clarifications and blah, 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 then by all means, just wait till the new ones come out, but please read the new guidelines when they do come out.
Absolutely. Sorry I interrupted. Over to you.
Totally fine. Totally fine. The last major change that I want to talk about is about the sex and gender items on the marriage documents. Now, you'll know we've talked about this many times in this podcast because everything keeps changing. Changes have come thick and fast on this issue since marriage equality was legalized on the 9th of December. The current status, as per the new compulsory that I think came out at the end of April, OPD, and the new frequently asked questions that are on the Attorney General's website, is that for item 1 of the NOIM, which asks them, do you want to be bridegroom or partner? And for item 4 of the NOIM, which says, is your sex male, female, or X? They can choose whatever they want.
So you can just put yes, please? Yep, no, good joke.
No.
I thought it was a good joke. I thought it was good.
Terrible. Terrible. There are three choices, male, female, or X. You have to circle one of the choices. You can't just write your own answer on there. So, no. Moving right along, though. So, it now says it is up to the parties to decide which descriptor and which sex they want to use. So, that means boys can be brides if they want. Girls can be grooms if they want. So you may recall that last time we talked about this, You had to choose bridegroom or partner in line with your gender identity, and your sex had to be in line with what it said in your documents. That's no longer the thing. The thing now is you just ask them, would you like me to describe you as bridegroom or partner on the paperwork? And are you male, female, or X, which is indeterminate or non-binary or whatever? And the FAQs that are on the website do point out that there are very valid reasons that people might have their legal paperwork in a sex that is not the one that they currently identify with. For example, there might be people who identify as non-binary, i.e. X, who haven't changed their passports because they want to be able to travel to countries where X isn't recognised. Or currently in every state and territory in Australia, you have to have almost every state and territory in Australia, you have to have gender reassignment surgery in order to change your birth certificate. So not every transgender person wants to have surgery or can afford surgery or feels the need to have surgery. So therefore, their identity and how they present may differ from their paperwork, but they're still allowed to put whatever they want on the NOIM and the marriage certificate. So this is a huge win. Yay. I'm taking a little bit of the credit for this because I wrote letters to a bunch of people and I encouraged other people to write letters to a bunch of people, and it's really cool. So now the answer just is ask them. Ask them. What do they want to be? Easy. So good.
I love it.
Yeah. And now I'm officially done with all of the updates, and I'm quite pleased because that only took me like 30 minutes and last time it took me about an hour and a half. So everybody should be happy that the last version of the podcast did not survive, because I was clearly much more verbose in that one.
Well, there's so much to cover, so.
There is.
It's good. You did really good, Sam. And can I just say, on behalf of the rest of the settlement population, thank you for giving way more of a shit about this kind of stuff than we do. I like it.
It is my pleasure. I am quite happy to be a nerd. It's no problem at all.
So that brings us to the wrap up of the podcast. Hopefully the next one will be a little bit closer to this one.
We definitely hope so.
Our lives are a little bit nice. Actually, can I proudly say on Monday I go on a week's break. I'm just Britt and I are turning off phones. We're just going to step away from work and we're actually going to Byron for a couple of the.
Nice.
I'm not going to Byron. We're going to bloody Bali.
Oh, yeah. Right. That's a bit different from Byron. Yes.
Yeah.
Nice. Lovely.
Yeah. So it should be really good. I'm really excited about it.
Excellent. Excellent indeed. Thanks, everyone, for listening. As always, you can always email us on hello@celebrant.fm. We do know that a lot of people have emailed in with questions or comments in the last couple of months, and we definitely will respond to all of those in future episodes. But I just wanted to deal with all of these changes because there's so much happening at the moment. So we definitely will respond. Please keep sending in your comments, questions, anything, and we will definitely get to that.
Sarah, thank you for another episode. Thank you for your intelligence and your wisdom and all of those things that I do not have. And it's always a pleasure chatting to you. Talk to you soon.
Always a pleasure. Talk soon.